let's go. Set the pace, watch me steal the show. Higher ground, yeah, I'm rising fast. This is my moment, it's built to last. Keep the focus, keep the drive. No slow motion, I'm alive. Power surging, can't deny. I'm unstoppable, touch the sky. Level up, yeah, this is the fight. Feel the rush, can't kill the stride. Eyes ahead, I'm moving strong. This is the anthem, let's sing along.
Hello everyone, and welcome back to the Balanced, Beautiful, and Abundant podcast, where we go from burned out to balanced, beautiful, and abundant by aligning our life in the seven pillars of abundance: spirituality, fitness, emotions, romance, mental, social, and financial. And today we are going to be jumping into the romantic pillar, which I'm really excited because we haven't been in that pillar for a while. And I know so many people listening to the show, whether they're married and want to reignite the spark, or whether they're single and are looking for that special someone, they will benefit so much from the conversation, because this is Rachel Dornianu, and she's going to be talking about highly sensitive people. So welcome to the show, Rachel.
Thank you for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
Yay. I'm going to tell my audience a little bit about what we're going to be talking about today, because
please
do not leave this conversation. If you've ever struggled with anxiety, perfectionism, people pleasing, feeling like you're too much or too sensitive, or wondered why stress seems to affect every area of your life, including your relationships and intimacy, then this episode is for you. Our guest today, Dr. Rachel, is a licensed therapist, a certified sex therapist. I like to call her a sexpert. A board-certified coach specializing in anxiety, highly sensitive people, perfectionism, people-pleasing, and sexual wellness. Rachel has helped countless women reconnect with their bodies, reduce shame, regulate their nervous systems, and create healthier, more fulfilling relationships. Today, we're diving into the fascinating connection between your nervous system, emotional health, and intimacy, and why healing one area can transform everything. Welcome to the show, Rachel. Let's dive in.
Let's do it.
For those of my listeners meeting you for the first time, give us a little bit of your origin story. What inspired you to become a therapist with such an interesting niche, specializing in anxiety, nervous system regulation, intimacy, under the umbrella of highly sensitive people?
Yeah, so I'm going to find a way to share my story that will be short. But I was always like the mom friend, the listener, always like the DD for parties in college and all of that. So I've always been that kind of person in the first place. And then I've always found it fascinating of how people work, what makes their minds tick, how they have those little fun light bulb moments. So that's been a blast. And then the reason that I work with the people that I work with is because it's stuff that I'm recovering from myself. So the anxiety, the people pleasing, the perfectionism, the highly sensitive, all of that is me to a T. So typically the people that find me are like, oh, so your entire website is me. I was like, I'm your girl. So we have a great time. And then I've always found intimacy just the coolest thing in the world. I took a human sexuality class in college, and she came from a evolutionary of desire perspective, and I was hooked ever since. So I've loved it.
Are you married or in a partnership?
Yeah, I'm married and I have two kids. I have a 3-year-old and a 1.5-year-old. So we are in it.
I love it. Yes, you're in it to win it. All right.
That's right.
So let's talk about highly sensitive people. I know this is a concept that is new to our show, although it's been around for a while. Mm-hmm. Tell us, what is an HSP, which is the abbreviation for highly sensitive people, if you're listening to this, and how can someone tell if they are one? Like, give us some of the traits.
Yeah. So some fun facts is that it affects around 20% of the world. So that's great. It affects men and women pretty equally. And then past that, there's a really lovely acronym called DOES, D-O-E-S. That's easy to remember. And so it's depth of processing, overstimulation, emotional reactivity or empathy, and sensing the subtle. So that can mean the depth of processing could be of where you're feeling things really intensely. You think a lot, you're in your head a lot. Maybe there's some overthinking. That's where maybe some anxiety might kick in. The overstimulation is not just you're uncomfortable. It's your brain is like offline at that point, and you need a way to calm your nervous system and breathe and come back to a calmer headspace to then be able to continue with your tasks the rest of your day. And it can be overstimulation from not just one thing. It could be any of our five senses. Maybe it's the fluorescent lighting that's in a shopping room. I know I hate shopping and like really like intense fluorescent lighting. One, because it's not flattering, but two, because it's overstimulating, right? And then maybe itchy fabrics or feeling really not claustrophobic per se, but just really tight, like sardines packed in a large crowd. Maybe it's loud noises, certain tastes, certain smells. Like I know if I go into a fragrance outlet store, I'm done for. I will have a huge headache because there's too many fragrances going on at once.
Yeah.
So that's kind of some of that overstimulation piece. The emotional reactivity and the empathy is you're not just noticing and being like, oh, that sucks. I heard that thing about your day and you move on. It's having the empathy to really understand where somebody's coming from and noticing that, wow, you had a really tough day because of X, Y, and Z. That must have been exhausting and so draining for you. I can feel that. And then sensing the subtle, this is one of the things that I find interesting is that let's say you're at a party and you notice that someone looks a little uncomfortable. Maybe they're the wallflower or they're sitting near harsh lighting. They're sitting on an uncomfortable couch cushion. They're like, I just want to go help them. And that's not in a forceful way. It's, I can tell they're uncomfortable. Let me find a way to help accommodate and make them feel more comfortable to be more inclusive. So it's noticing the tiniest little details and things within ourselves, our environment, other people. It is a helpful acronym, the DOES acronym.
I love that. Now, what about the people who sense things that aren't true? Like I have friends that are like, oh my God, I'm sensing that you're abandoning me or pulling away. And I'm like, no, I'm not. I'm just really busy. How would you diagnose that?
Yeah, that I don't know that person. So let me clarify that.
In general, like people who think they're sensing things that aren't really happening, like they're taking things way too personally in general.
Yeah. That's typically some projecting of like whatever's going on for them. They might be being like, oh no, maybe that's what's going on for you. And it's easier to displace it or put it somewhere else. So that could definitely be a possibility. Or they could be a bit like over aroused, like not in a sexy way, but like highly hyper arousal, if you will, of sensing all the things. And maybe there's a bit of stuff that's like being blown out of proportion. So being able to like kind of check in and hone in of like, is this me? Is this really what's going on for them? Let me check in on them before assigning them feeling anxious, pulling away, withdrawing, and that kind of thing.
So what are ways to regulate and calm your nervous system? If you are a highly sensitive people, if this is resonating with you and you do get overly stimulated, which I think we all are in a way with all the pings and dings and social media and, you know, hundreds of shows to watch. And it's just like, you know, our mind is kind of like a ping pong or like a pinball game. How do you tell your patients and how do you regulate your nervous system?
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, one, I'm also a registered yoga teacher. So I pull in a lot of somatic stuff of being able to have deep breathing and calming, meditation, visualization, journaling. I make sure that every client I ever work with has an absurd amount of resources and coping tools, things in their toolbox, so that whenever we start working with the harder stuff, that they already know, like, hey, I've got five things in the toolbox that I can pull from immediately. Mm-hmm. So I always do that. I think somatic's really powerful, but also maybe there's some reframing, noticing. There's some really lovely evidence-based kind of practices that I use. And so there's cognitive behavioral therapy known as CBT. There's dialectical behavior therapy, which is DBT. And then there's acceptance and commitment therapy, which is called ACT. Why is my field so obsessed with acronyms? I'm not real sure. But those are some ones that there is a lot. I mean, I even had the DOES acronym earlier. So maybe we'll start tallying how many acronyms I have at the end of this. But the things that I think are helpful in terms of calming your nervous system is also noticing and finding ways to be objective and not judgmental of ourselves. So the high achieving perfectionistic people that are on in your audience, but also with myself, is we're going to find ways to notice rather than have our inner critic be really loud. So that could look like something called the window of tolerance. And so I'm not sure if you guys have covered this before. If you have,
tell us about it.
For pressure. So with the window of tolerance, you might ideally feel some kind of normal human experience of open, safe, curious, feeling alert, being engaged, somewhat normal human experience, right? And then you have something that's above the window of tolerance called hyperarousal. That's when you might feel anxious, irritable, withdrawn, overwhelmed, trouble with sleep and digestion. It's typically the fight or flight response. And then you have something below the window, which is called hypoarousal. And that's when you have, again, trouble with sleep and digestion, but it's isolation, depression, just really kind of going into your shell, finding ways to get out of things, and even the freeze response. And so with that, you ideally want to stay in the window. If you're not, life happens, but let's find a way to stay having highs and lows throughout the window of tolerance and not skyrocketing into the stratosphere of hyperarousal and then crashing back down to earth into hypoarousal, because that throws up our whole nervous system, leads to chronic stress and burnout and all the things that are going on in the state of our world right now. So we need to find a way to gently come back, find our window of tolerance. That could be, let's say if you're living in hyperarousal, that you want to do things like deep breathing, going for a gentle walk, not going to hardcore, sweaty, hot Pilates. That's right. Going to send your nervous system back into the stratosphere. Things that are calming and gentle, maybe restorative yoga. That's something that I teach that I'm obsessed with.
I'm obsessed with it. I love yoga. It's the best for
it's so good.
Calming down, you know, the high achieving perfectionist in me, yin yoga.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's good just to tap your brain out for a minute, right?
Yeah. And to breathe.
With the hypoarousal, you want to find a way to gently boost your system back into the window instead of skyrocketing up and having an intense roller coaster throughout the day. So maybe that's doing that instead of having the words are so hard today, y'all. I'm operating on like European time zone.
And you have a 1 and a 3 year old, so you don't need excuses for, I mean, you're like, yeah, you're in the forest right now. And are you in Europe? Where are you?
No, I just got back from Romania like a week ago. And so we're adjusting the kiddos, myself, getting back into in-person sessions. We're doing it all.
All right.
But with hypoarousal, maybe something that's a little bit more energizing, a brisk walk, doing certain types of breath work of where you're having more heart rate increasing, faster breathing, not shallow and surface level. That's going to lead to hyperventilation. We don't want that. But there's certain types of breath work. There's even an app called Breathwork that I'm aware of. It's free. There's maybe 14 different categories of helpful breathing techniques, and it guides you through the whole thing. I'm very impressed. If there's anybody that's listening from Breathwork that wants to do some kind of affiliate something, let me know. But it's fantastic. And so being able to notice those patterns, are you operating more intensely in the morning when you wake up? Is it more of the evening and you've done work and kiddos and the sandwich generation, checking on your parents, you're wiped out, where are you operating and just kind of plotting where you're operating first and then being able to play with different coping skills and regulation, it can be very, very helpful.
So when you're talking to a highly sensitive person, I mean, you don't want to be codependent. You can't like take care of them, but what are some ways to just kind of, I don't know, handle someone like that? If you're, maybe you're not the highly sensitive person, but there's someone in your life who is, like, advice and how to communicate with them in a loving, effective way?
Absolutely. Yeah. So like I'm highly sensitive. Mm-hmm. My dear sweet husband is not, mm-hmm. but he is neurodivergent. He's got ADHD. So we have a lovely set of overstimulation and different neurospicy things going on. We're a great team. So the things that are helpful though, is that I might be very sensitive around certain things, being able to communicate that in not a whiny way or a codependent way on my end, but it's saying things from an I statement of like, I feel, I saw, I heard, I observed. Things are going to go way better if you're having I statements rather than you statements. Because you statements lead to defenses.
I feel this way when you dot, dot, dot. That's a good pattern because you're not then doing you. Because when you say you to someone, they immediately get on the defensive.
Yep. Yep. Spot on. So I know for me, I'll say something like, I feel frazzled when we're late to a dinner reservation and I need time for us to get there on time. I can settle into the atmosphere and enjoy our quality time together for date night. That being able to communicate that is a direct and kind way of, if we're late, you don't get happy wifey. You get grumpy wifey, and I don't think you want that. So here's the things that I need to be able to be happy wifey for you. And so that tends to work well. And if he is just like in a place of, I don't know, I don't understand, what is this thing? Because I remember when I found out about being HSP in 2020, height of the pandemic, I was like curled up on the couch. What is wrong with me? Why do I feel this way? I was like, oh, because I have no one to talk to. And I'm losing my shit. That being able to communicate it in a healthy way, using the DOES acronym to let people know what's going on, all of that advocating is lovely. And then for the person that's not highly sensitive, which is totally cool, that's 80% of the world that's not highly sensitive, is being able to take a look around, be able to, if anything, put on like some highly sensitive glasses, if you will, and be like, okay, so I can better understand what's going on. Is there anything in this environment that might be a little intense for somebody? Not in a, let me caretake every little thing and nitpick, but just to gain a little bit more awareness of what's going on for somebody, having some empathy can be really helpful. And if someone is like, I just still don't get it, that's okay. And you just tell your partner or whomever you're interacting with, maybe somebody that recently figured out that they're highly sensitive, be like, I'm trying to get it. Help me understand. What are some of your triggers? I know that's such a buzzword right now, but what are some of the things that really throw you off? Is it maybe dealing with my mother-in-law? Is it dealing with my kids after, you know, witching hour? Is it dealing with, I don't know, the teens or the young adults that are not hitting curfew? What's the thing that really gets you? And being able to check in, understand, see how you can work together as a team and find compromises and solution-focused kind of conversations.
Those are all so good. We are going to cut to a quick commercial break. When we come back, we are going to talk about why so many successful women are perfectionists and people pleasers. Thank you for listening to the Balanced, Beautiful, and Abundant Show. And we'll be right back after this short commercial break. Welcome back, everyone, to the Balanced, Beautiful, and Abundant Show. We are talking to Rachel Dornianu. There's my perfectionist coming out. I'm like, I've got to say it right. I'm a recovering perfectionist. I'm a people pleaser. I'm a high achieving woman. So are a lot of the women who are listening to the show. So why do these patterns develop and how can we keep these patterns in check so they don't impact our ultimate happiness, which is our goal?
Mm-hmm. So if anything, those, all the things you described, that's me too. So we're all recovering together. We're all figuring out what's going on. The things that I think about is that I would love for there to be a quick fix, to be like this one pill, this one magic something to fix it all. If there was, I'd be a billionaire by now. But with that said, the things that of where it tends to kind of come from is almost like a cute little triad almost of having highly sensitive people, of having people pleasing, of having perfectionism, and also having some kind of neurodivergent, neurospicy something in there. that they all kind of intermingle and they all kind of feed off of each other. So there's some interesting things to think about there. If you already have some kind of neurodivergent diagnosis, be like, do I have some perfectionism things going on? Is there some people pleasing stuff? Maybe some trouble setting boundaries as well, some anxiety, some chronic stress, but all of that kind of lumps in together. Therefore, why those are all my specialties. But past that, it's fascinating that a lot of highly sensitive people that I've worked with, or even high achieving people I've worked with, is that a lot of the perfectionism and people pleasing came from childhood, young adult life. And the reasons I say that is not to be like, oh, blame your parents and your coach for doing these things. It feels easy to put the blame somewhere else, right? But to notice, if anything, as objective as possible, where'd it come from? What's going on? Was it because of, I don't know, a parent that had high expectations in school? Was it because it was a step parent or a coach that had trouble with boundaries, that had trouble with respect, that there was maybe an expectation with sports, appearance? I know that, especially working in the part of town that I'm in, I'm based in Atlanta, that there's a certain Southern Bible Belt expectation of doing things, of how to communicate, how to hold
yourself.
Where are you?
What part of town are you in?
So I'm in the town of Cumming, and it's spelled C-U-M-M-I-N-G.
That's the perfect town for an expert to live, right?
Exactly. I was like, the marketing pays for itself.
Exactly.
So my Google rankings are like off the charts right now. It's awesome. So love that. But with being even in the part of town that I'm in Forsyth County and in Cumming, Georgia, that it is fascinating how many people are just like me. And so with that said, the perfectionism, as we're going into young adult life, middle life, further, that there are so many tendencies that started off in childhood and young adult life that have just continued or even been exacerbated over time, of certain expectations for yourselves, for your relationship, for work, for your children, for your parents, that all of that can be a big piece to think about. The people pleasing, I think a lot of that is from wanting to make sure, if you're highly sensitive or neurodivergent, is to keep yourself safe. Mm. That it was a lot easier to take care of other people, be like, they're there. I'm not going to anger you. I'm not even going to give you a reason to think about messing with me. I'm going to make sure that all of my chores are done and all of my papers are done 5 days ahead, so that I feel calm and safe and no one's going to call me out. I'm not going to have fear of judgment, fear of rejection, fear of not being liked, any of those kind of fears that'll be coming in as well.
I think a lot of women are people pleasers and we fear confrontation, but one of my favorite success books and the first self-help book ever written by Napoleon Hill, Think and Grow Rich, says that successful people confront each other, whereas average people talk behind each other's backs. So mm-hmm. Do you have a good method or formula to help women confront without feeling like they're dysregulating their nervous system or disturbing their peace?
Yeah, the things that I think about is a bit of something we mentioned earlier, of those I feel statements.
Right.
And yes. The phrasing of, I feel this emotion when this happens and I need this. That's a way to be kind and direct and honest and play from there. Mm-hmm. And then there's also something called the Four Horsemen of the Apocalypse, if anyone's heard of that before.
I've never heard of that. What are the Four Horsemen of the Apocalypse?
Sure. So the Four Horsemen, I cannot coin this. I wish I did. It's from Gottman Method Couples Therapy. If you guys have heard of the Gottmans, they're amazing. If not, do a little research. I can send you some links and things to put in the show notes later if you'd like.
Sure.
So the Four Horsemen of the Apocalypse are the four main ways that we handle conflict in an unhealthy way. Okay. And so that's criticism, defensiveness, contempt, and stonewalling.
Ooh.
And so, they're fascinating. So there's those pieces, and then there's the four main ways to combat those horsemen. And so the way to combat criticism is to use something called a gentle startup. If you're doing more of like a gentle asking of like, hey, could you help me with this, rather than, why didn't you take out the trash? right? It's going to be taken a little bit better if there's a gentle startup. And then the way to combat defensiveness is taking responsibility. So my bad, I forgot to take out the trash last night. I'll make it a priority this evening. Thanks for the reminder. Rather than, so I'll figure it out later. Don't, why are you getting on me? Right?
Right.
And then contempt, finding a way to describe your own feelings and needs and not describe your partner. Mm-hmm. So that's where that I feel this when this happens, that sentence formula is gold.
Yeah.
And then stonewalling is actually really interesting. That stonewalling is also called emotional flooding. It's when you're not just upset, your whole system's thrown off. And so I know a lot of women that have stonewalling. And so what's happening is that your brain, the prefrontal cortex up here, is not fully developed till you're 25. But also that's the rational decision making. You also have different parts of the brain that are for emotion regulation and calming. And so when that's going on, your brain is offline. You are in full fight, flight, freeze, fawn of how do I survive this situation? So that fawning might be some of that people pleasing that we were talking about of, hey, let me take care of you so that I feel safe, so that you don't attack me. So that stonewalling, the emotional flooding could be, it might look like silent treatment, but it's typically, I am just not in a headspace, deer in headlights. I've got nothing going on. I'm just surviving this moment. Mm-hmm. So being mindful of that, and the way to combat that is to do a way, it's called physiological self-soothing, psychobabble. Find a way to calm down.
Yeah.
What's happening is that cortisol is the stress hormone. It's released from your brain into your bloodstream. It takes 20 minutes for cortisol to leave the bloodstream. They've done full studies on it. That's a long time, y'all. That's like an episode of Friends without commercials. So with that said, finding a way to take a step back and breathe, find a way to not continue that conversation, not to be thinking about that conversation. If you take a step away, let your partner know that you'll be coming back. And those are the four horsemen.
Yes. Walk away from the computer, put the phone down, leave the room, get some fresh air. Like,
absolutely.
Feel like getting out of that situation. In my first marriage, I got the silent treatment a lot as a way to punish me. And I don't think it was because he was flooded with emotions. I think it was the four horsemen, just an unhealthy way to handle conflict. And I'm sure you know about attachment anxiety, but that is the worst thing you can do to an anxious attached person.
Yes.
Is the silent treatment.
It is painful.
Do you have any advice for someone if they do have someone in their life who is giving them the silent treatment and it's very triggering, especially if they're anxious attached?
Yeah. So I feel like we have the same brain.
As spirits. I love it.
Kindred spirits. That's where we
get tested each other, right? Through the love.
That's right. And so with being somebody that's had trouble with anxious attachment in the past, some things that have been helpful for me, but also clients that I've worked with, I love doing attachment style stuff. It is fascinating.
Yeah.
That being able to have a way to give them less power, giving it less energy, less attention, if that's how they're choosing to behave and have their reactions and their behavior, okay, do your thing. I'm going to focus on myself and my well-being and what feels okay for me. I might check in on them, be like, hey, when you're ready and in a headspace to talk, let me know. I'm happy to be here and chat. And if they respond, fantastic. If they don't, we leave them where they are. And we find a way to reassure ourselves of this is likely not about me. If it's silent treatment, that's on them. It's up to them to be able to be like, okay, I'm going to find a way to advocate for myself. That's a healthy relationship. Healthy communication is not silent treatment. Making sure that there's a way to reconvene after an argument or a piece of conflict and behave, I mean, honestly, as adults, to come back and have something called like an aftermath of a fight discussion and find ways to communicate calmly and find solutions going forward for the future. That's a healthy conversation, not silent treatment.
So you negotiate that like before the fight, like if we get into a fight, let's take, you know, a timeout for a maximum of what, 24 hours, 48 hours to calm down. And then let's have like an aftermath conversation and try to do a resolution. So you would negotiate that as part of the relationship. Is that what I'm hearing that correctly?
Yes, spot on. And that's something that I really recommend for when I'm doing couples therapy or couples coaching, is to be able to have those conversations in the office, in the session, and be like, hey, let's have a solid practice round with something that's maybe a little uncomfortable, but not world shattering. Because if we start off with the intense one, we're not going to have as many ways to mark small successes along the way and be able to feel progress and satisfaction with that. So starting with something small and building from there. There's also something that the Gottmans do is they have a pulse oximeter that they put on each person's finger. And don't quote me on what the actual number needs to be. It's left my brain. It's still in Romania. But with that, there's a certain number that you need to be mindful of. And that's when you might be having cortisol in your bloodstream and you might be hitting, or you might have being like stonewalling or criticism or defensiveness, contempt. You're more likely to have those things because your heart rate's higher and you're able to scientifically notice what's going on. So if you ever get a wild hair and want to have a session, let me know. But I think that it's fascinating, the science behind what's going on, because there's a whole brain body connection and how we interact with other people, our communication. It's fascinating.
It is fascinating. On that note, we are going to take a quick commercial break. And thank you guys for listening to the Balanced, Beautiful, and Abundant podcast, where we take you from burned out to balanced, beautiful, and abundant. When we come back from the break, we're going to talk about how anxiety affects intimacy and emotional connection. We'll be right back. What if your dream retreat really existed and you got to help create it? If you're a high-achieving woman who's been doing all the things, I need your help. I'm planning my next luxury wellness retreat, and I don't want to create what I think women want. I want to create what you actually dream about. Tell me, what's your dream destination? What activities would light you up? What feels like the perfect investment, and how many days would help you truly reset and realign? Think wellness, connection, community, adventure, luxury, rest, and whatever feels nourishing to you. If you've been craving success without burnout, this retreat is being designed with women just like you in mind. Take my 2-minute survey. It's linked in the show notes. And who knows, your dream retreat might just become a reality. Do you feel like your love life is stagnating? Have you been single forever and feel like giving up on love? Or maybe you're in a relationship that's lost its magic. I want to give back to the Balanced, Beautiful, and Abundant community with a complimentary 15-minute romantic reset call. It's a space to reconnect, reset, and recalibrate your energy around love. Together, we'll uncover what may be blocking connection and create a fresh spark so that you can feel more open, aligned, and ignited in your love life. Because love isn't about forcing or chasing. It's about creating space and becoming magnetic to the connection you truly desire. Get the details and book your complimentary reset call in the show notes. Welcome back to the Balanced, Beautiful, and Abundant Show. So Dr. Rachel, one of the things that you specialize in is anxiety as well as intimacy. So how does anxiety affect both emotional and physical intimacy with our partners?
Sure. So the things that I think about with anxiety is that there can be physical symptoms, emotional, mental, spiritual, all sorts of things, all the aspects of wellness. If anything, is all the pillars that you talk about in your podcast, right?
Yes,
all of it. It's fascinating. So if anything, being aware that it might be manifesting in one way today and manifesting in another way tomorrow, but finding ways, I feel like that's almost a theme of today, is being objective, being kind, just noticing what patterns are going on for you of those physical, mental, emotional, and so on symptoms. And it can affect the emotional intimacy, of course, because if you're scared to talk about something, it's not going to be shared. Vulnerability will be harder. So finding ways to, if anything, have small successes along the way of, I'm uncomfortable when this happens. I feel scared. I feel hurt when this happens. Being able to have small little moments of sharing and if anything, kind of testing the waters with a new partner, a current partner, friend, family, whomever, and being able to test the waters that way and being able to build trust over time. Because if we have great trust, we have better vulnerability and better emotional intimacy. So there's that piece. With the physical intimacy, it's actually very interesting. A lot of the clients that I work with, the physical intimacy feels easier than the emotion. That they feel way more comfortable taking off their clothes or cuddling or holding hands or anything like that because it feels less vulnerable. It feels less intense and invasive, which is fascinating because when you think of things, you know, from an outside perspective, emotional is talking.
Right.
But it might feel easier for them to use their bodies, use ways that feel more comfortable and known at the time to communicate and express some kind of affection, intimacy, rather than the emotional. So being mindful of how do you tend to operate? Is it more emotional or is it more physical? And from there, with having the anxiety with the physical intimacy, for those that are having concerns there, it could lead to pelvic pain. It can lead to all sorts of things that are going on with perimenopause, menopause, postmenopause, that it can lead to trouble with arousal, trouble with any sort of orgasm, any kind of climax, any kind of anything going on in that pelvic region. And so if we're not able to have a calm nervous system, we're not able to enjoy intimacy physically and honestly, emotionally. That we want to make sure that we feel safe to feel sexy.
Ooh, I like that. That's a good phrase from this podcast, feel safe to feel sexy. Now, when I'm personally pissed off at my partner, not this one, because I'm in a good marriage, my first one, I didn't want intimacy. I was just like, the walls were up. So I find it interesting that you're saying a lot of your patients can still be intimate and kind of detach or dysregulate from their emotions.
Mm-hmm. It is fascinating. For them, it might feel easier. You just be like, I'm going to lay here and just...
Or that could be like...
Do the duty.
That could be people-pleasing as well because...
Exactly.
If they're recovering people-pleasers and perfectionists, they would just rather like... As they say in Will and Grace, as Karen said, just lay down and think of purses. I'm just kidding. then confront. So let's go into the next question. So we're getting into the juicy part. So I'm glad if you're listening this long, I'm glad you didn't disconnect to the show because this is when it's going to get juicy. So many women, they feel guilty because their desire doesn't match their partner's. So what is desire discrepancy in your work, and how can couples navigate that with compassion?
Yeah. So desire discrepancy. So here's the thing. Society expects for the men, the stereotypical man, to be always roaring, ready to go.
Yeah.
Love that if that's you. Typically, that's not the case. And for the women to be like, I guess, if I want to, but keep in mind that every person is different. Every sex drive is different, that there might be the woman that's more excited about things than the man. And there's different types of desire. So there's spontaneous desire and responsive desire. Now, I'm not sure if you've covered this on the show.
No, let's talk about that distinction. What's spontaneous versus responsive?
Responsive.
Okay.
Responsive. Yeah. So with spontaneous is where just having a brief thought, a feeling, a glimpse, and you are ready to go. Love that. I'm not that way. The responsive desire is you might need a little bit of wooing, a little bit of something, something, be like, warm me up, and then I'm ready to go. That's typically more of a female situation than a male, but keep in mind, roles can be switched. Depends on what's going on. Mm-hmm. So keeping that in mind of having spontaneous desire versus responsive desire. There's also, if you're highly sensitive or neurodivergent, there's other types of subtypes of desire and drive. We can cover that in another episode if you want. But those are the two main ones, the spontaneous and responsive. And from there, it's helpful to know if anything, kind of like on a scale of 1 to 10, that's another Gottman thing. I feel like I'm just plugging them left and right, but they trained me and they're geniuses.
Yeah.
That there's the 1, 5, 10 breakdown. So if you're at a 1, you're like, please don't touch me. I have no desire to do anything. However, I love you. I still find you sexy. I'm open to holding hands. I'm open to cuddling. I'm open to a long 10-second hug. That being able to say, even though I'm not in the mood, I still find you wonderful. Mm-hmm. And this is what I do feel comfortable doing. So having that kind of conversation, especially if there's, you know, kids around, I don't know anybody that has a teenager that wants to hear, hey, you want to do something? No one wants to hear that. Being like, hey, I'm at a 1. That feels typically a little bit more comfortable. If you're at a 5, then you're like, maybe do a little something, a little bit like the wooing, the responsive desire stuff. Maybe I'll be in the mood in a minute. Just do something. Maybe like play with my hair, kiss my neck, do a little neck massage, and I'll see how I feel in a little bit. I'm at a 5. And then if I'm at a 10, it's like, yes, please. I will meet you in the bedroom in 2 minutes. So being able to have that kind of conversation and maybe some numbers behind it to let people know where you're at. And also to make sure the partner's aware. Don't just throw out, hey, I'm at a 10. They'll be like, what does that mean? Please have that conversation with them and figure out maybe your definition's different. Maybe a 10 is a 7. Then what's the 10? Let's figure out what that is. Let it be a fun conversation.
That's a good way to speak in code too around young kids. Like,
exactly.
Instead of talking about sex, like, oh, I'm at like a 7.5. Where are you at?
Mm-hmm. Exactly. It's great.
So let's talk about how chronic stress affects intimacy. Chronic stress keeps us stuck in survival mode. And especially women, you know, when we're working, we're in our masculine energy, we have cortisol coursing through our veins. What is a good way to move from like your masculine energy producing a result to being passive, more feminine, more sexual, more in your parasympathetic nervous systems? Like, what is a good downshift for the high achieving women listening to the show?
Yeah. So I honestly think about some of that window of tolerance stuff that we talked about earlier of noticing where are you operating. And if you're in hyper arousal, the window of tolerance or the hypo arousal. So there's that piece to just gather information, gather data, be objective, notice patterns. From there, it can also be helpful to think about how do I want to feel in this moment? I might be feeling here. How do I want to be feeling? And I'm not saying you're going to just magically, you know, flip a switch and feel that way. Gosh, that'd be cool. But just to find ways to notice, all right, what's going on? Okay, I want to feel calmer. I want to feel more sexy. I want to feel more nurturing. What are some things that come to mind to bring that about for me? Is it, if you're wanting to feel a little more sexy and excited, is it a certain playlist? Like, I love Bad Bunny. It's a whole playlist. If that's like my little mojo jam.
That gets you there. That. I love that.
It's great. So being able to have something that'll help bring about that feeling or a memory, it can be fantastic. Maybe if you're wanting to be nurturing, does it help to bake some chocolate chip cookies? Does that help to bring back a sense of calm and safety and nurturing and caregiving? What are the things that you want to feel and how do we get there? That can help to have some little toolbox and things like that. Like, I just made some American flag cookies for 4th of July the other day. My kids are gobbling them up and I had a great time making with them.
You are the perfect wife. I got to tell you, I know you're recovering from perfectionism, but come on, you have a kick-ass career as a sex therapist and you're making homemade cookies. Like, girl, you're crushing it.
Thanks. I appreciate that.
So what is the biggest myth about sex, intimacy, and emotional wellness that you wish people would stop believing today?
Oh, I have so many.
Well, give us a couple.
The one that sticks out the most right now is that scheduled sex is bad.
Mm.
That is a huge myth, especially if you have young kids, teens, you know, being soccer mom, dragging people hither and yon. Wow, how Southern. That
Translate that for the people that are international and from different regions of the world. What the heck does hither and yon mean?
From hither and yon, that means from here to there.
Okay.
So with I'm surprised that came out of my mouth. My dear mother will be so proud. So with that, I got so excited about Southern twangs and things, and I lost my train of thought.
We're talking about the myth of scheduled sex.
Thank you. So with the scheduled piece, there is one, personally, nothing wrong with it. For those of us that are neurodivergent, highly sensitive, it gives us a way to plan and be excited and build excitement compared to, it's Thursday night. I guess we got to have sex now. If you have that mindset, it will be like that. But if you have the mindset of, I'm excited to, if anything, get it on with my partner. I'm excited to cuddle. Even if I have like no energy, I've got a migraine, we can at least hold pinkies. Mm-hmm. We can do something to lay there together and be in silence and just have togetherness. It doesn't have to be intercourse. It doesn't have to be something that's penetrative. It can be any kind of definition of intimacy or scheduled sex that you want it to be. And keep in mind that we don't want to pressure our partner, because if we have pressure, that leads to anxiety and stress, and we're not able to be aroused. And then it's all yucky, as my 3-year-old would say. So with that, being able to be flexible with our expectations of the schedule situation, but also find a way to let it be exciting. Maybe if you're the person that has the responsive desire, encouraging yourself and your partner to maybe have some flirty texts during the day, to be able to have like a cute little note written on their nightstand, or like throwing out a new toy of, hey, we got a little something to look forward to later tonight. Get excited, right? Making sure that it's still fun. And so if Thursday night's your night, fantastic. Let it be an exciting thing, something to look forward to. Put a little heart on your calendar and let it be exciting rather than something that is dreadful.
Yeah, it's all about perspective. We can look forward to it as something fun and exciting and not, oh God, this is our scheduled time. I just think so many things can be reframed through a shift in perspective. Well, let's get into some rapid fire questions. I texted you some of these questions, but I didn't text you the rapid fire because I like you to be spontaneous.
Let's do it.
Okay. Coffee or tea?
Coffee.
Beach vacation or mountain getaway?
Mountain getaway.
Yoga or strength training?
Oh, I do both.
But which one lights you up more?
Oh, strength training. I have Bad Bunny going while I'm lifting.
I love it. I like strength training a lot too, but I do yoga once a week. Morning person or night owl?
My brain is better in the morning after I've had coffee.
Okay, how do you take your coffee?
Well, usually at least 2 shots of espresso and some kind of oat milk and maybe a little vanilla syrup in there to spice things up.
Nice. What is one book every woman should read that speaks into some of the themes of our interview today?
Oh. It's so hard. I have so many behind me.
I know. Just pick one, though. That's why it's rapid fire.
No, I know. I'm not good at this game. Let's see. Oh, what is it called? Something like The Empath Survival Guide. That's wonderful.
She's going to be on the show.
Oh my gosh.
Friend of mine, Dr. Judith Orloff. She's going to be on the show. We were just on a virtual summit together. Yes. I love that book, and I love Dr. Judith Orloff. So now you can say you were on the same show as Dr. Judith Orloff, the author.
I feel so honored. How fun.
Yeah. So stay tuned, everybody. She'll be coming in the show soon. What is one habit that's had the biggest impact on your mental health?
Exercise daily.
Nice.
It's been very impactful.
What's one thing you're saying no to more often these days?
Less networking calls. I know way too many people. I need to focus on nurturing the relationships I do have. And if anyone is new and wanting to connect, of course I want to talk, but I might be mindful of when I have those calls.
Very good. And fill in the blank. I feel most abundant when?
I'm with my family.
Beautiful. Well, Rachel, this has been such a great, insightful conversation. Thank you for helping us feel better with our anxiety, our perfectionism, our people-pleasing, helping us understand the powerful connection between our nervous system, emotional well-being, and intimacy. So how can people learn more about what you're doing and connect with you? And what is your website?
Yeah, so you can find me on most social platforms with Sage Counseling and Wellness. And my website is lengthy. It's sagecounselingtherapyandwellness.com. I think that's the longest domain name I could possibly find. And with that, I do therapy, coaching, speaking. I love to travel. If anyone wants to have me in Europe again, let me know. But I love being on the podcast. Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much, Rachel. And thank you, listeners, for going on the journey with me to live a life of alignment, not the hustle and grind. And until we meet again, keep your vibe high and magnetized. Bye, everyone. So excited to share a review from Melissa Myers, the Glow Girl. She says, inspiring podcast. Rebecca has a gift for creating meaningful, empowering conversations that leave you feeling inspired and uplifted. Balanced, beautiful, abundant is like sitting down with a wise, soulful friend who truly wants you to thrive in every area of your life. I love how she blends practical advice with spiritual insights. I'm so grateful I found it. Well, Melissa, we're so grateful that you found us, and we can't wait to find out how you are glowing and growing by using this podcast as a tool. And everybody who's listening and sharing, thank you so much for your support. And it's such a joy to be on this journey with you.